Good morning. We are live at the brand new Hearst Media Center on the campus of the Times Union newspaper in Colony, New York, before a live audience. And how do we prove to you that it's a live audience? They are going to applaud loudly. Good morning. Welcome. Thank you very much for being with us. We have an incredible panel set up for you. So we are at the Hearst Media Center. This is in Colony, New York. If those of you who are from the Capital Region and know where the Times Union newspaper building is, we are in that building, but it is a beautiful center. And let me introduce the panel, and then we'll talk to Rex Smith about this place, and then we'll get into the discussion for today. Joining us on the panel this morning, of course, to my right, and the only time that he's on the right, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Director of the Journalism Program at the University at Albany, and our panelist, at least for two or three more days, Rosemary Armeo.
Yeah. Thank you.
A man who has been with the show from the very beginning, since we started in the year 2000, was with us all through that and has been an essential part of this panel, is one of our oldest and dearest friends, and our lifeline to the Times Union, Associate Editor Mike Spain is here.
Thank you.
And Times Union editor Rex Smith and host of The Media Project joins us this morning as well. Good morning, Mr. Smith. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Donahue. Thank you.
So,
welcome, 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 as they say.
First of all, this is so nice to be sitting at brand new tables. They don't have ZD smeared all over them yet. This is like great. This is really lovely.
It is. It's just
everything's
swell.
New and smells new. And so, how did this? At what point? At what meeting did you say, "Hey, you know what? We need a media center."
Yeah, this is the creation of George Hearst, our publisher, who had this idea. Actually, even before he came up with the idea of this place, he was saying the newspaper ought to be the center of community conversation. And we had this vacant space. In fact, I feel like saying to people, welcome to the composing room, because a couple hundred people used to work in this space. with the
change... I bet they're thrilled by this, huh?
Yeah, right. Well, I said to the crowd before we went on mic here that, actually all we have to do is convince Donald Trump that this is unfair competition and we'll have, bring back hot lead the same way we do with coal mining, you know? It's a great thing. But the composing room we don't really need it anymore because we have what's called direct to plate. That means the editors electronically create pages and then it goes right to a plate making room that this audience can actually see through a window through that wall. And so this space was really unused. And George said, we could have a meeting space. Now, there is actually a practical element of this that goes to the world of journalism, and that is that because of the internet, the advertising that has supported our enterprise for years is going away.
No.
So you have to find other revenue streams. And while everybody who's here today is here for free, we do anticipate there will be events here that we will charge people for. Folks paid $15 a ticket to come see the legislative leaders a couple of days ago here and hear a conversation. And so this is part of the next generation of the future of journalism, a way to create news here and to present the reporting that we do.
Rex, I wanted to ask you a question, if I may. I came this morning. I've been in this building before. But I had to, in order to get into the building, I had to go almost to California and turn around a rotary to get back in here. And I'm wondering if that was on purpose.
Well, you have to take that up with the town of Colony and the road crews. We have nothing to do with that. We'd love to let you make an illegal turn into our parking lot. But
I just made the illegal turn into the parking lot. But... All right. Well, that's great. So here we are, and it's a beautiful space. And so, next time when we come, charge people, for God's sakes. We got $100 ahead for Rosemary's party. For
$100 ahead?
Yes. Please.
And it went
I
in
want
the
another
lockbox.
Cake for that, too.
Well, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? We have things to talk about. What are we going to
do? Well, let's talk about Donald Trump.
Yeah, well, okay. So the Comey story goes on. The James Comey, who is, of course, the former FBI director, fired on Tuesday. And the reason given Tuesday was that he botched the Hillary Clinton. He was too mean to Hillary Clinton, basically. He was too mean to Hillary Clinton, and he botched that and screwed it up. And according to Rod Rosenstein, just was an idiot, and that we had to get rid of him. Okay, so that story started to erode yesterday and started to fall apart. And there are many signs, different stories that have come out, one of them being that days before the firing, Comey went to the Attorney General and said, I need more resources. And he said, oh, what do you need those resources for? And Comey said, I need more resources for an investigation into Russia. And 2 days later, he was fired. Now, I don't know if you can draw any conclusion to that, but I'm interested in what the panel thinks about how that looks. I am going to start with Rosemary because, unfortunately, she got stuck in a train station yesterday, and we didn't get to hear your view on this whole story.
Okay, I want to start off by saying I think James Comey did a horrible job, and I'm so glad he got fired. If Trump had done this on January 20th, I would have said, maybe I'm a little bit wrong about him. He did ruin the election. It is inconceivable to me how he had the first press conference in July about Hillary Clinton, how he then comes back on Halloween and basically destroyed her chances, and how all the time he knew that there was also an investigation of her opponent, that he somehow, because of ethics and his own integrity, he's a very arrogant, self-absorbed man, read his goodbye to the troops. I'll be fine, he says. Not the country's in a constitutional crisis. We might be under attack, at least in the cyber sense, from Russia. No, it's I'll be okay. Don't worry about me. I'm not, James. I'm glad you're gone. However, Trump miscalculated, and I don't. I'm even feeling a little sorry for him really. He did not. He wanted to get rid of Trump. It's ridiculous to think that get rid of Comey. It's ridiculous to think that Sessions and the deputy had anything.
I'm sorry.
To
who do you
that.
Feel sorry for, though? Or?
Trump. And I'll explain why.
All right.
If you stop jumping down my throat.
Well, it was an outrageous statement. Go ahead.
I would like to point out that yesterday or 2 days ago, when I couldn't make it, when I had my little train problem, I did get many letters saying, "Wow, the guys are really boring. They really do need a woman." Yes, you do.
It's not just a woman. It's Rosemary specifically that we need.
I don't think so. But anyway, Trump, you know, this is his pattern. He figures out what he wants, and then he's going to look for the legal way to do it, just like he tried with the Muslim ban. He's failed so far. So he's calling people, and basically they're telling him the same thing that I just said, that this guy's a jerk. He really should be let go. You have the right to do it. Do it. And he got even the pushback was weak when he called Schumer. Schumer goes, oh, no, I think that's a mistake. You know, the timing's off. He really fully expected that this would be a bipartisan act, that Democrats would be happy to get rid of the guy who ruined the chances for Hillary, and he'd be happy because he got rid of the guy. It's not just the Russia thing. Remember the wiretap, the crazy wiretap charge that, when he put that out, he wanted Comey to support him. And Comey instead goes public and says, just what I did. That's crazy. He used the C word on our president. And that sealed his fate, I think.
The nausea sealed it again.
That was just like another poke. So the problem, though, is you don't get, as president, to get rid of an enemy in that position. The FBI directorship has been sacrosanct. In fact, the only other firing that I know of was William Sessions. It's the same players over and over again. And that was because the guy was basically a crook. He was like stealing money and expenses that he should not have, and he was let go for ethics
violations.
Wait,
that's a present attorney general?
No.
Yes.
No.
William Sessions.
Different Sessions. William Sessions, yeah. Former federal judge.
Former federal. He was let go, and that was by Bill Clinton. And so I wish that Comey had been let go by Lynch. I think that there were grounds for it then. Now, why is he going? Well, it definitely is going to have a very chilling effect, not just on the investigation underway, but on any other investigation into Trump. He has shown what he does to people who cross him.
But Loretta Lynch, if the Democrat-appointed attorney general had fired Comey back during her – well, she still was in authority – the optics of that would have been just as bad, and people would be screaming just as they are right now.
I know, but we'd have a different president.
Yeah, but how do you do it? How do you get rid of somebody who has all the flaws that Comey has without having it blow up like it did this week?
Well, it's to me, it comes down to this: one and one makes two. We know what this is all about, don't we, everybody here?
Yes.
We know it's about the Russians. It's about the Russians. And the Russians keep getting closer. And yesterday, the day after he fires Comey, who does he have in but the Russian ambassador and the Russian foreign minister? Wouldn't you have liked to be a fly on that wall to say, don't tell, don't tell? And so that's what I believe this is all about. And no matter what you'd say otherwise, there's where we sit right now. And as a result of that, Comey had to go because he wanted more money, as Rosemary has so perceptively pointed out, for the investigation. That's what it's all about right now. And people are saying, well, it doesn't pass the stink test, or it doesn't pass the smell test, or it's a laugher. That's all true. It's ridiculous. Are we stupid? I mean, this is the same guy who ran for president and had his crowds, was practically leading the crowd saying, lock her up, lock her up. So now he wants to fire him for not being nice to Hillary? Are you kidding?
Well, they didn't handle the announcement of all of this very well, too, because that, I mean, Sean in the bushes, that was kind of cute. And Kellyanne came back. I have missed her so.
Now, apparently.
And then we have Huckabee's chubby little daughter. She's so cute.
Stop that. Stop that.
No, no. I'm sorry. I have to get it all in because I'm leaving soon. But, you know, she comes out and she goes, oh, it's really Rod. It's our new deputy. He really wanted him to go. We just had to make him out. Come on. They did it really. A real case to be made.
God help me if I had said chubby little anybody.
I know, I said it because I can't.
Yeah, but then you get on everybody's.
The world is so unjust, Alan.
It is.
You know, the Washington Post is reporting today that Rod Rosenstein threatened to resign after this emerged.
But we don't know who he threatened. We don't know who he said that to, who the threat was directed to, that I'm going to resign. And we also don't know why then did he sign or have the letter and put together the information that he put together. I mean, the narrative is the third round narrative from the White House was that they said, okay, Rod, you go ahead, put together some of the facts and of some of the things that are concerning. But none of that obviously included the Russian investigation.
His letter did not say fire the guy. Letter following the president's instruction from a few hours before was, what's the case against Comey?
Right.
Once he completed the assignment, the president then acted upon it and said, okay, this gives me the documentation I need to say I'm going to get rid of it.
Are we so sure that he wrote the letter? I mean, every day people come up to you, right, Rex, and say, sign this, you know.
It's
just
possible,
sign this letter.
It seems to be what the reporting is suggesting, that they have, so far.
The guy had been on the job for, what, 6 days, 7 days, and they asked him to do something, and he did it.
He gave them the ammunition they needed, and that's really all it was.
So then he said, and by all accounts, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but by all accounts, this is a career guy who has an excellent reputation. I mean, he was confirmed almost unanimously,
bipartisan,
just 2 weeks ago. So he comes in, and then what you're saying, Rex, is that when they started to throw him under the bus, he said, look, stop it or I'm out of here. And yesterday, the White House really did sort of distance themselves from that story.
They changed the story about why this,
how this happened. Because they didn't want him to resign and to leave and then to tell everybody exactly what had led to that.
But this is all going to come out.
It has come out. We're talking about it now.
It is, but it's going to come out before Senate committees. This is going to be, we're going to be talking about this day and about the Russia investigation through the midterm elections of 2018.
If the Democrats have anything to say about
Certainly. And they will probably figure out a way to drag it out.
The Democrats are so ineffective.
Well, they don't have any numbers.
I know. And there's nobody, unlike Watergate, and I'm one of the people who actually do think this has echoes of Watergate, so does John Dean, who's over TV these days.
Me too.
But what's different is there's no Sam Ervin anymore. Remember that guy? Remember Republicans who said, okay, wow, this is going to hurt my party, but I'm going to stand up for the country?
Howard Baker.
Yeah. I'm seeing Mitch McConnell saying, no, we'll handle it.
But, you know, here's what's going to happen. as his numbers go down, as Trump's numbers go down, let's say they're 40%.
They're 35% according to Quinnipiac.
Okay, so 35% going down like an elevator. Let's say they get down into the 20s, right? Now, you're a Republican United States senator or a Republican congressman who have been defending the flag up until now. You say, it's what, I'm going to keep on defending this guy?
Or not you me. Have a spine.
Yes,
no, you don't have you don't have a spine. You never had a spine. You never had a spine. They're spineless people. But what happens now is you say, I'm going to have an election. I'm going to be out of here. I better do what I got to do. Okay. So even John Faso yesterday, who has been steadfastly defending the president.
I'm sorry, was that a murmur and a boo in the room? Was that a murmur or a boo?
A boo ran through the room.
Yes.
As the old joke goes.
That's like Ivanka. Wow.
Okay, but you know that is what is going to happen now. Guys like Stefanik, people like a woman like Stefanik, or a guy like Faso is going to say, "Hey, it's me or him. It's going to be him. It's not going to be me." And so I think that's what happens now.
So far, Faso's on both sides of this, by the way.
Yes.
He is directly contradictory in his reaction.
Yes, he is. And in fact, Rex, you're exactly right. As I have mentioned a number of times, one of my favorite characters in New Jersey history was a guy by the name of Two Bucket Hughes, because he was always taking both sides as if he were walking around with a bucket on either shoulder, you know, trying to balance it.
Well, going back to the poll, I just want to point out that Quinnipiac poll, Joe, was completed on Tuesday before the announcement about Comey. So... The next poll will reflect Comey. That reflected the Republican ramming through of the health care plan, and that was at 35. So I don't know where it would be right now.
And do you remember the number, Mike? Because it was, to me, it was startling that it was 35% approval rating. But as far as those who agree strongly that he is unqualified and should not be our president, was over 50%. 51, 52%.
So he's unqualified, but they still approve?
No.
Of the 50.
The others.
Strongly. Like, very strongly that.
So it's very divided.
They're ticked.
And then they also are disapproving of the Republicans who control Congress.
So here's my question, and Alan, I'll ask you this, that because when you were just talking about Two Bucket Hughes,
again,
it reminded me of a question.
That's great.
Which is, so what wouldn't the Republicans have something to gain by saying, okay, let's investigate this, let's get somebody in, let's look at what's going on, and actually become the adult in the room?
Yes, but only because they're afraid. Up to now, they've been afraid of Trump, really scared. This is a guy who's unpredictable.
But we don't.
There are people making all kinds of accusations. They're saying he's got all kinds of character problems right now. Because every time I say anything about he's crazy or he's this or that, I get letters from mental health professionals who say, don't do that.
I know the chubby letters are coming in right now, so don't do that again. Go ahead.
You know, no, it's just a matter of self-preservation. Or as Festus would say, don't you see?
Festus on Gunsmoke, you mean, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a matter of self-preservation.
You know, Two Bucket Festus?
Alan is showing off. He does this every time we have real people.
It's your fault.
Our favorite was when somebody came up to Rosemary and said, why don't you just slap him?
Oh, I get that all the time.
Yeah. We all do.
That's why they put Joe between Alan and everybody else.
So, I'm sorry, but did you finish your point?
No.
What
okay.
point?
All right. Was it?
But I can't finish my point because they take advantage of me. They know I have no memory, so they interrupt me, and then by the time I come back to finishing my point, it's gone.
It's a form of ageism.
This does not stop him from talking, however.
So, Rosemary, in the minute that we have before we have to go to a break, do you believe there is an opportunity? Don't you think there is an opportunity here for Democrats to seize on, or excuse me, for Republicans to seize on this moment?
Yeah, but it would require uprightness. It would require thinking bigger than their party, and I have not seen an ounce of evidence of that happening.
No, I don't see it happening, and remembering that they're going to have to run against a Democrat in a general election. So if they turn on their own, they lose half their people who are still Trumpistas, and that's a big problem for them.
And they're all chubby.
That was profound.
Stop it. Stop it.
She can't help herself. Huh?
Good Lord.
Glad I didn't say it.
So, Rex, do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm just shocked. I actually think the time is coming. I think that you will begin to see
you're
a
right.
shift.
I think you're right.
Chuck Todd last night said it's going to take one more massive screw-up like this.
Any day now.
Right, right. Well, that's what,
the but self-inflicted wounds come fast and furious with this group. Yes,
but I don't know. Is that will that be the case? I don't know. Also, I want to. Well, we're out of time. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We're gonna go into some more topics, and then we'll go into the audience and have them ask us some questions as well. We are at the Hearst Media Center on the campus of the Times Union newspaper. It is in Colony, New York, exit 4 of the Northway, and we would love you to check it out.
And good luck getting in.
It's Hearst Media Center. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Romeo, Rex Smith, and Mike Spain. We will be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Hearst Media Center on the campus of the Times Union newspaper in Colony, New York, before a live audience. We can prove that to you because they're clapping enthusiastically right now. It is wonderful to have you all with us. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Rosemary Armeo, Rex Smith, and Mike Spain make up our panel. We are at the Hearst Media Center, and it is just a beautiful space. We're before a beautiful crowd. And right before the break, we were talking, obviously, about Jim Comey. And I know, Alan, you had a point to make about this investigation.
One last point, and it seems to me, it occurs to me, and I'm sure to everybody else in the room, that if Comey went to the Attorney General and he asked him for more money for the investigation, you would have had to have a reason for doing that. In other words, he had something. And that is what Comey now has. So here comes Trump. He gets a choice. Do I fire the guy and risk the leak of whatever Comey had that was propelling the investigation forward or not? So I think that that's a pretty good sign right there.
And yet he can't really control it anymore. In fact, Comey can't even control it because right now there are grand juries now. That's what the new reporting reveals.
And subpoenas.
Issuing subpoenas. This is now being run by prosecutors in the Justice Department, not by the FBI. The FBI investigation, yes, will provide fuel for the Senate Intelligence Committee, which now seems to be growing more aggressive in the aftermath of this. But really, there are federal professional prosecutors now who are in charge of this stuff.
Now, Rex, you know, one of the things I love about you is how you
here
came
comes.
From
here
South,
comes.
From South Dakota, where there's a certain amount of naivete, let us just say that.
My people have been insulted.
Yeah, you bet. And now the interesting thing is that we have to see that if an attorney general who is sitting on the top of the pile, even though he has so-called recused himself, remember how he recused himself, but he was in on the firing of Comey. That's one thing, but I'm a little bit worried because I think if they start hiring who've been mentioned for the head of the FBI.
All horrible.
That buffoon.
Christy Giuliani.
That buffoon from New Jersey.
And who's
Giuliani.
The third? There's a third that I didn't know. Well, I'll find it. Go
okay.
ahead.
Those guys, I don't think that's going to happen. But I do think that when you're a lower level
Trey Gowdy. Sorry. Trey Gowdy was the other one. You know him. Also the little Benghazi Nazi.
She's really good on her way out.
What do you think he weighs in at?
He's a skinny little one. Yeah, he's okay. A scrawny one.
All right.
Hey, what's that skinny stuff?
No. I hear he doesn't eat at all.
No, but
bugs, but, probably.
But the question is, does somebody who is the new head of the FBI put a wet blanket on any investigation that's going on? Do people have children and want to make sure that they're... A guy once wrote a whole bunch of nonsense about me in a newspaper, local newspaper, and he told me later on, he says, hey, the boss, you know, the boss ordered it up. I got kids and I got a family and all the rest. Okay.
I think Trump wants that, but here's the place where we may see that person standing up. We're not seeing it in Congress, but maybe it will be at the prosecutorial level. And unlike like what Rich Honan talked about on this week's program. Sally Yates did that. She could have indeed quietly retired, just said, no, I'm not going to do this, moved away. She made a public statement. She knew what she was doing, and it was standing up for the American people, who she really represents. And that's what prosecutors need to do.
Well, I hope you're both right. I just think it's indisputable that somebody who has a job, who is a professional prosecutor, takes orders from above. I don't think that and things like, can we have some more money for the investigation because we have to do more? No, you can't have it. That has a tremendous impact.
But don't you think those will come up when the Senate gets to weigh in on the nominee, that they're going to build into that some promise of independence and some promise of funding in order to give it a bipartisan support? Because he can't have a 51-49 kind of approval of the next head of the FBI.
Mikey, do you remember when we did this business with the Saturday Night Massacre and they started firing Elliot Richardson and everybody else, and they got down to who would take their orders?
Robert Bork.
Robert Bork, of all people. We should have known then.
Right.
We did.
We did.
But when Jaworski came in after that, when Leon Jaworski was named the successor, he did have more powers. It was promised that he would be given more access and more resources in his investigation, and that really ended up bringing out the tapes, and that was the downfall of Nixon.
I don't know. I remember Jaworski, and I don't think he was a knight in shining armor either.
Oh. I think we're really, really far from having a special prosecutor of any sort outside of the Justice Department, and the only way it's going to happen, because it won't be Republicans, Democrats don't have the numbers, it's going to be thousands of people calling, of citizens calling and demanding.
But
only way it'll happen.
But Rosemary, who makes the appointment? So now we got a situation where there's going to be a new FBI chief. Who's going to appoint him? Trump. Who's going to appoint the special prosecutor? Now, the only way to go here is with
Alan. Rod Rosenstein makes the appointment.
Oh, and he's
the Rod special prosecutor.
Ron Rosenstein doesn't appoint, refer to a higher authority.
He just got kind of trampled by that higher authority. And he does have a great record in Maryland. I have hopes for that.
No, just let me finish this one little thought.
Okay, as long as you don't make errors that I have to.
No, it was. trust me, you're not teaching me anything. Okay, so who makes that appointment? There's only one way to get this thing done, and that's when the Republican senators realize that their offices are at stake, and that they have to appoint and go along with a select committee and appropriate the right kind of money to do that. That's the
correct
way it's going to happen.
Michael Beschloss makes that point, the great historian. He's made that point in something published this morning, where he says that it was the senators who demanded, in the case of Watergate, a new special prosecutor. And that was only because the people were protesting, because the senators realized what was happening. Now, if you all heard the NPR report this morning from Congressman MacArthur, the author of the MacArthur Amendment that allowed the health care bill to go forward, he had a town hall meeting last night. 300 people showed up.
5 hours.
It was unbelievable. The people were, it was almost unanimously furious with him. And if that starts happening, it was both health care and Comey now. And if that starts happening across the country, it is happening actually across the country.
For the ones who will have meetings, Rex, because an awful lot of them won't. And they know exactly what's coming, so they won't do it.
Do you refer?
They are getting better about that. Those who are not having meetings, Democrats are stepping in and say, we'll have a meeting for him. So there are ways. I also have commented about the logistics of protests, and the left is really out of practice at that. The Tea Party, we're stealing from the Tea Party, which is good. We're going back to the 60s. And there are going to be, or there could be, protests on this that would make a difference.
But who will be the Howard Baker in the Senate? Who will be the Republican who steps above the fray and calls for, uses his authority or her authority to call for an independent investigation?
Well, we already have McCain.
And what happened to Lindsey Graham?
Yeah, he kind of caved.
Why did he cave?
Right away. Yeah, he was not bothered by this and made it very clear.
Because it was that McCain-Graham sort of duo that was going after
him. Yeah, because what happens is they take a look at their ratings, their approval ratings among Democrats. Republicans in potential primaries, and he said, I think I'll have some of this, perhaps.
Somebody's going to look at the numbers in their home state. Ben Sasse of Nebraska, Jeff Flake of Arizona, who's up for re-election.
How about
and they're going to see those numbers, and they're going to say, you know, I could be the guy. I could be Howard Baker. I could make my
bones.
Thank you. That's the term. Looking for these old trait statements, I know I can turn somewhere.
Ooh, that was a shot.
Yes, it was. Oh,
very
my
proud,
goodness.
Very proud.
I want to, first of all, a note. Most people have gotten it, but I just want to remind you, we're not taking letters today. So if you're listening to this program, we're not taking letters because we have a wonderful audience, and they have lots of questions. And we're going to go to the audience in just a minute. We're going to take a break in exactly a minute. And then when we come back, we'll take audience questions and comments from them. And but we'll obviously be taking comments tomorrow on the show when we're back at home base and at the studio. I do want to ask real quick, though, as far as the Michael Flynn subpoenas, I mean, I think this can't be lost, too, of what you were saying, Rex, is that now this is in judicial hands, and that's a big deal.
It is. It's an independent watchdog that you don't have to worry about the politics of it, the judiciary, and I do think that the lack of discipline in this administration, which has revealed itself by leaks going to journalists all the time, is going to be a great advantage for people trying to get at the truth, because people are willing to speak about what's going on because there are so many leaks that it will help us to learn more of what's going on.
Now, Rexy, but the point here is this, that those subpoenas are coming, right? Not from the judiciary, not from the Justice Department, but from the Senate, aren't they?
Senate Intelligence Committee.
Yeah. And that tells you a lot right there.
Both. There is a grand jury now, see. Yeah. So there will be some subpoenas there, too.
Yep.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversations. We will get – do you guys have questions? Do you have questions? Excellent. Wonderful. That means we actually have a segment.
But so we'll be but I don't want anybody saying, what will you do when you – what will they do when you die?
We know the answer to that already. We don't have to ask.
We'll talk about that during the break. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Rex Smith, and Mike Spain, and, of course, this beautiful audience. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Times Union. It's the Hearst Media Center. Why isn't it the Times Union Media Center?
It's all of those things. We'll all take right. Any brand you want to give us.
It's the Hearst Media Center. We are in Colony, and we were before. Are we good now? Okay, great. So now we go into the audience for questions. Who has questions? Hello, how are you? What question do you have for our esteemed panel?
Well, the Democratic members of the House have been talking about the fact that if Trump continues the way he does, I think the words were marching toward impeachment. And I'd like to get some feedback on how realistic the members of the panel think that this really is. How close are we to having something like that happen?
Well, there is a question here of oligarchy. The Senate is not yet an oligarchy. One person is the dictator of the House of Representatives, and that's Ryan. And as long as Ryan remains staunch, it's not going to happen. Unless, of course, as Rex correctly pointed out, this march becomes inevitable as people realize it's them or Trump. But I think it's going to be quite a while.
Yeah, I think he could shoot somebody out on Second Avenue and nothing happened.
Not yet.
Right. Frank Rich does have an article in New York Magazine that was published yesterday that kind of lays that out as a possibility. But that also points out to being a very long time.
But when it comes, I think that what you have just seen this last 24 hours will be one of the articles of impeachment. So this is a big deal.
Obstruction of justice.
Mm-hmm. Next question.
Is it my imagination, or does it seem as if upstate New York electronic and print media are giving Congresswoman Elise Stefanik a free ride?
You know, it's a really interesting question.
Okay, I have two things. First of all, that was a great question. And second of all, I don't know who you are, but you have a great radio voice. Okay. So don't take my job.
And we got to find out who his early professor was who taught him everything he had.
Oh, is that true? Is he one of yours?
Yeah, of course.
Excellent. Do you remember his name?
Howard.
Howard, excellent. Okay. So, do we feel that Elise Stefanik is getting a free ride?
It's difficult. She is in a district that it does not have as much media. That is, her district actually begins with Saratoga County, so we cover her some, not as much as we do John Faso and Paul Tonko. But we've been covering her a lot more than we covered her predecessor, right?
That's right. She is a pretty significant player because she was the youngest woman ever elected to the House of Representatives. She has a lot of connections to Albany County. She went to Albany Academy for Girls. She grew up in Guilderland and in the North Country, where White Wiltsboro is at mm-hmm. the family home up there. So she is very well known in this community, and we followed her. She's been very careful, Joe, to walk a very fine line and hold off on committing to what her opinion is on something. And if she gets, and if she doesn't have to, she doesn't. And we didn't really know. She was in the uncertain category for the health care bill that passed last week. And then right at the last minute, of course, she went and was one of the key votes to get it passed. And she's taken a lot of heat for it now.
I will say, however, that we have on WAMC had her on the Congressional Corner. Is two times qualify for several times?
Twice, you know, in 17 months.
Well, several is always, yeah. And we have a wonderful station in Plattsburgh that goes, you know, is pretty good. So we've been covering her. I could say that.
Next question.
Hi, I actually have a comment. One of the things I wonder is if Mitch McConnell is hanging in there because he is really waiting for those federal judges to be appointed. I guess there's a whole bunch of seats that are open. 100. I think he's playing a long game where he's waiting for Trump to be vulnerable enough that Trump eventually is going to have to ask him for his support, and he's going to say, give me those judges, get them in, and then McConnell will dump him.
He's already got those judges.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. I agree with you.
McConnell is, and Ryan, too, even to a greater. McConnell is a great strategist. I mean, what he did with Merrick Garland was horrible and highly effective, completely effective. So what's to stop him now? He holds the key to the rules, the Senate rules. He's in the catbird seat. On the other hand, if he could flip to Pence in a minute, nothing would change.
So what's in it for him to stand by Trump?
Party loyalty.
Somebody in the audience said his wife.
Yeah, that's true. She get another job. He that would be no problem.
We should point out she's a cabinet member. Yeah.
All right.
Department of Transportation.
Trump is the Republican president now, so he's sticking with his party over anything else and is getting what he needs from Trump. Trump will give him the legislation that he wants to get through. So until Trump starts to fail in terms of his personal standing, I think McConnell's solid with him.
All right. You talked in the last hour about laying the groundwork for a coup down the road a ways here. Is Steve Bannon behind the screen pulling the strings?
I have no idea. Does anybody here really know?
Well, I know Snyder's work, the eminent historian.
Somebody said hi.
It's me, sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
And I think it's going to be, if we see a coup here, it's not going to be Bannon, it's going to be Trump. Who is fomenting that, and he's going to want to stay in office. This is a guy with a tremendous ego needs, and if he sees himself at 20% in the polls, he's going to have to do something. That's my bet.
We don't really know, though, how the White House operates. I think to your question, it's very difficult for us sitting here to have a sense of it because Trump keeps the lines of authority so jumbled. He likes to have these competing power centers, so you don't know from one day to the next whether Jared Kushner or Bannon or who is really leading things. And
the New
all
York,
we know is what's
the New York Times article, which I thought was really interesting, the Maggie Haberman piece today of looking at the last 3 days, said that Ivanka and Jared were pretty much out of it and didn't offer that guiding hand, but Steve Bannon was in that conversation.
Yeah. Well, actually, he was saying slow down. He actually gave good advice on that one. Wasn't.
But he was in the room.
He was there. Yeah, I remember we were all encouraged when he got kicked off the Security Council that maybe he was out. I don't think he's out. I think it's ultimately Trump who's putting together this policy that has nothing to do with ideology or goals. It just has to do with his glorification. And he listens to Bannon. He listens to Reince Priebus. He listens to his family. And then comes up with whatever he wants to do.
You know, I think you make a very good point because I was watching the Despicable Morning Joe the other morning. And
I thought you liked that show.
No, I don't like that show. So I don't like either of them. So
don't watch.
I gotta see what the enemy is doing.
Oh, okay.
No, what was interesting was that he was saying, you know, what he says about Trump, because he's a Republican, and he says the lifelong Democrat Donald Trump. See, that's the appellation for him, which I find so interesting. Goes right to Rosemary's point that he doesn't have a particular party loyalty. Well, no, there is a sort of. We used to talk about it when I worked for the police department, what we call the F test, the fascist test. So you give a bunch of questions to somebody and you see whether they're approaching, you know, fascism or not. Now, I think Trump is Democrat or Republican. I think he's approaching that in terms of, you know, the things we've been talking about, Rosemary, about the press and doing mm-hmm. Doing all those other things. So he may be a Democrat, but I think he's a very, very scary fellow from that point of view.
Here we go. Another question.
Okay. I'm hoping the panel can clarify something for me. I was watching MSNBC the other day, saw something about what I thought was additional subpoenas being issued to the banking department. Basically, follow the money approach in terms of what Trump's organization and whatnot, what, you know, what connection they had with Russia. And I have heard nothing about that since. So I'm wondering if you can give me some clarification and some additional information on where that lies.
FinCEN is what it's referred to. This is the investigative arm of the Treasury Department, which has a lot of information, a huge quantity. I could almost quote the statistic if I had better memory.
Do they have people's tax returns?
They do, in fact. And so the question is, so the Justice Department turned to FinCEN to ask for information, saying we need information about the president's tax returns. And I think you may have a good point there. That may be one of the issues that also had Trump feeling as though Comey was breathing down his neck. That plus the fact that Comey recently, about 3 weeks ago, started getting daily briefings on the Russia investigation, not just weekly. That according to the Wall Street Journal. And so this is all, but I think the touching into FinCEN is a significant step because they're really going for where the data really is.
I wish reporters had subpoena power. We get it.
Yeah, we get
now,
it.
Also, some state attorney generals have been reported to be looking into, including New York's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, looking into any crimes that may have been committed in their states involving banking laws. And then it all suggests that they're looking into this connection between the Trump businesses and Russian interests through the Bank of Cyprus. And this has been reported previously, but exactly where that's going is a bit nebulous, but it all could become, it could be part of, if all of this explodes, that may come out and be very hurtful.
We're going to sneak in one question here before we go to a break at the top of the hour. Hello, John.
Hello. People are drawing a lot of parallels between this, or trying to draw a lot of parallels between this and Watergate, the Watergate era. But there's one factor out there that we have now that didn't exist at Watergate, and that is a pretty powerful conservative right-wing media edifice. And what kind of a hurdle does that create for Congress people, as well as the government, to people that wish to see this particular era come to an end?
Great question, and one of the reasons it's so great is because these guys who you want, you've been talking about today, the Republican congressmen who you want to come over to the, appropriate stance on Trump, are afraid that that media will crucify them and that they won't win right-wing primaries. Good point.
We also have now a 24/7 media, which we did not in 1973, which means that in Watergate, it seemed like there were explosions over time and you were just waiting for it. Now the TVs are on all the time. It's freaking exhausting. And you get two completely different points of view depending on what channel you have
but
on.
But the right-wing media is not a monolith. This is Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh do not necessarily speak the same language all the time anymore, And Glenn Beck, for example, thinks that this, I believe, that the Comey firing was a terrible mistake. And nor do they each individually have as much power. Limbaugh is not as powerful as he used to be. People will stand up to him now. So they're... Every monolith or every edifice, you said, that was a good word, has its cracks. And I think this one we may be seeing a beginning of the cracking. Even Fox News does not have the power it used to have. And now maybe Sinclair Broadcast Group is going to come on and present a challenge.
That would be the end of the edifice complex.
But a boom.
That's hopeful. I'm not sure I would. Glenn Beck, I grant you. And Fox still seems to hold together. Hannity, there's a whole... God, listen, turn on the whole lineup that whole night is still pro-Trump and anti-Democrat.
The point is good, though, that if you are in favor of Trump and you're opposed to the Democrats, you can find a place to go that will feed you.
Right.
That may not have existed in a broad level back in the Watergate era, and it was pretty much a mainstream media that was distributing the information and breaking the stories, etc. Now, if you are bothered by that, you can find comfort.
We are at the Hearst Media Center on the campus of the Times Union newspaper in Colony, New York. We are before a live audience, and we have Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, Rex Smith, and Alan Chartok. We will be back for another half hour of fun and frivolity here in Colony. We'll be back right after this break. Good morning and welcome back to our live broadcast of the roundtable panel from the Hearst Media Center on the campus of the Times Union newspaper in Colony, New York. Before, listen to them, a live audience. They sound great.
Yeah.
Now, if I want to rent this place out for my birthday, how do I do that? If I want to throw myself a party, you know what? If I want to throw Rosemary another goodbye farewell
yes,
party,
good
how do
idea.
I do that?
Well, it'll cost you, Joe. It'll cost you big time because we got to make up for all that advertising that's going to Google and Facebook instead of going to nice local businesses like the Times Union. So that's a plug. So
that's what I thought this whole thing was. But go ahead.
It is. And let me say, I haven't really said this. I don't think I'm really grateful to you guys for coming out here. You know, the media project. Yes, that too. For those of you who are listening live, the Media Project. Sunday night and Monday afternoon originates from this place as well. But I'm really grateful to WAMC for coming here and helping us kick off this place. It's not easy for you to bring all this apparatus and the staff out here and everything. Hi, Sarah. The producer sitting in the green room there. We actually have a green room now at the Times Union. Isn't
that
cool?
That's very nice.
And when you say the Times Union campus, I just feel all inflated and everything. We call it the factory.
The last time you visited us to broadcast the roundtable, it was in 2006 when we celebrated our 150th birthday at the Times Union. Wow. And we so appreciate that, and we're glad to have
you. We were
back
up in
now.
Your offices then.
That's right. Well, just only across the hall.
In the, okay. other, the other part of the campus.
The other part of the campus?
Right. Down campus.
Hey,
yes.
Hey, Mike, I'm surprised. You really don't look 150 years.
Right.
Some do.
Yeah.
So now, was that a shot? No. So if people want to find out, then go to timesunion.com and find out how they can rent out the place, right?
That's correct, actually. You can I would give you a number to call, but I don't have a memory any better
no,
than
I don't think it's
I'll
legal.
Give the number. I'll give the number. I know it. It's 1-800-323-922.
Very nice, Alan. Well, we wish you all the best with it. It's a beautiful facility. It's really like brand spanking new now. It just looks great. And I just hope you have many, many years of wonderful things coming out of here.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Very glad
you're all here.
Well, it is a pleasure to be here. We will continue our conversation as far as news items. We'll talk a little bit, and then we'll go back into the audience. And I know they have some more questions for the group, so we'll get to those as well. I want to just zoom into something real quick because we talked about it only for a moment, but the irony, the high comedy, the tragedy of all of this going on, as yesterday, Trump spent the day meeting with
Russians,
and the very guy who got Flynn in trouble and everybody else, including Jeff Sessions, in trouble. I could not, I know this is a presidency that does not seem to care about optics. I mean, he cares about his optics, but they don't seem to care about the overall optics. I cannot think of anything that looks worse. How did that happen? Why did anybody, I guess this gets to your point of where at some point, yeah, there you go. Mike is showing us a picture of the president just beaming with the Russians as he's talking to them. And as should be noted, this is a photo taken by the Russians because the U.S. media was not allowed into the room and into the building. Okay, so who wants to tackle we make of this?
I've said it before. I'll say it again. One and one makes two. This is all about the Russians. Now,
the Russians?
I'm going to tell you why. Because they know. Remember what they were saying about Flynn. It wasn't that Flynn talked to them, but he was subjected potentially to blackmail. And if it's true that they have something on Trump, then Trump wants to bring him to the White House and maybe, just maybe, whisper in their ear, please don't say anything. And another clue to that, Joe, would be, why don't you allow the American press in there at the same time? You let the Russian press in, but you don't let the American press in. That's because you don't want them asking questions of these guys during that time.
I don't know that it's all it isn't at all thought out at all. This is the price of impulse. The firing of Comey was the president's impulse, and I don't think he gave consideration to the fact that he'd be meeting with the Russians the day that this all
could
blew
be.
Apart.
Well, this is where you think where you. If you had a more organized, saner organization.
Rosemary, Rosemary just put out her tongue.
Well, I was pulling it back in, so I didn't sound like
no, well, meaning no, the meant... point, meaning the point that if because they are so impulsive, there is no one to say, oh, by the way, the Russians are coming tomorrow. Maybe you want to do this a couple days later.
I think I'm in between the two of you. I think he is a bully, and he's saying, you think I have something to hide with the Russians? I told you I didn't, and I'm bringing them right in, and you can't come see them. I think it was deliberate.
Could be. Any of it's
I don't think there's anybody on his staff, including his daughter, who really can dissuade him from doing something he wants to do. And that includes firing Comey. It includes, you know, I want to meet with the Russians. I'm the president of the United States. I'm meeting with them.
So help me out, and as Alan made this. Thank you, Alan. I'm sorry, I couldn't see your name tag from here. And I'm not even from South Dakota, but I'm going to be naive on this particular thing, Rex.
My people are taking it on the chin again.
And that is, well, if you have the opportunity with the. To do this and to meet with the Russians and all of that, at what point do you say, okay, I think that we look at this entire situation and the problems that we have and why aren't the people looking at it, and especially even the Republicans who have said that the Russians are bad dudes and we have to be wary of them, and that's why we have to keep up the investigation. The president's meeting with the Russians in the White House on the same day he fires the FBI director the day after within a 24-hour period of time, and that doesn't engage anger from the Republicans and from the Republican senators.
So your question is, why not? Why isn't somebody saying, this guy is out of control?
Well, I think you have the perfect optic. Don't you have the perfect optic there if you are a Republican and you want to stand up to this and saying, well, look, we have concerns. Why are we concerned? Well, they're meeting right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that optic is there. You're right. They could take that opportunity. So why doesn't somebody? And I think, again, it's because he is the president and he still does have some clout and he has great popularity still with his base. So don't you think they don't want to tick off that 30% who are going to be with him always?
Well, enough with the base. Right? I mean, it's 30%. Enough with the base.
If you don't understand the base, you don't understand what's going on here. I think Rex is exactly
right. Now we're having a music lesson.
Exactly right. Here.
Daddy sang bass.
Daddy sang bass. No. But what I was fascinated by was the fact that, remember, Trump put all the generals in. Remember, he put all the generals in. As soon as the Russian stuff kerfuffle started, Trump was still, you know, Putin's a great guy and I want to be friends and all the rest of it. The generals in the cabinet turned around and said, no, no, the Russians are terrible, and they are our enemies, and they have been our enemies from the very beginning. Now, that got me crazier than usual, because now I'm thinking, did he tell them to do that? In other words, could he have it both ways by saying, I'm Putin's friend and I made my deals with Putin or whatever else, and I told the generals to remind everybody that these guys are not our friends, which they did. These are the people in defense and everywhere else. So that made me wonder even more about how this is going.
You took your eyes off Tillerson, who's over there negotiating energy deals with the Russians, which I believe is what this is really all about.
Could be.
Well, what surprised me is the Russian foreign minister came out of it, and he gave a statement that essentially said, you know, we're ready to deal with the Americans, and you know, we're ready to work with them to improve our relationship. And then he took a slap at President Obama. Now, where could you possibly have a diplomat come out of the White House and openly criticized the previous administration? That never would have happened between any Republican and Democrat.
Do you think that he was told to do that by the Trump people?
Well, he probably was trying to
curry favor with them.
Right, curry favor with President Trump.
They're in cahoots.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll finish up in our last few minutes here at the Hearst Media Center with questions from this beautiful audience. We'll be right back after this. Good morning and welcome back to the Hearst Media Center in Colony, New York, where we broadcast live the roundtable panel this morning. Alan Chartok, Rex Smith, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain, and a wonderful audience, including a questioner.
Yes, thank you. My question is about ethics. I was watching 60 Minutes, and it talked about the, I think it was the Virginia governor, mm-hmm. who the Supreme Court overturned.
McDonald, yeah.
And the continuous stream of things with the Kushners in wherever they were in China. Does anybody care about any of this? Like, I'm so distressed. Every time I read about Ivanka or Kellyanne advertising for them, it's like, why do they keep getting away with this? Like, why, how? Is that, does anybody care, I guess is my question.
Well, and I guess that even goes back to my Russia question. Thank you very much. And that goes back to my Russia question earlier of why doesn't anybody care?
Yeah.
Good question.
You know, we run into that in New York State as well. We hear all this talk month after month, year after year, about improving the ethics laws of New York State, and it doesn't ever happen. So it does lead you to wonder, why not? The major ethics laws in the United States were passed really in the aftermath of Watergate, when people were sensitized to it. And it seems as though now we've gotten just so cynical. We seem to think that, well, that's just the way government is. I think it's part of a decay of institutions all around. And so we expect less of government because we're more cynical about all the institutions of society.
Well, I want to give you a tremendous compliment, Rex, which is so unusual for me. No, because the newspaper, the Times Union, really has been very good on this. They have been right up there editorially and everything else. The answer is that in some states like mine, the very, very good state of Massachusetts, we have something called initiative and referendum. Anybody can put something on the ballot, and it will pass if it's a good idea. So you rein in legislators that way and do it. So now think about this. Would you all vote for ethics reform if you were able to on a ballot? Of course you would. And therefore, these guys have gotten into office the way they are, and they are not going to make a move which puts them at risk for holding their office or anything else. That's the answer to the question.
You don't ever get good ethics from laws, even good laws. And yes, there are people who care about ethics. Some of them are sitting right in this room, and we are making our voices known. And it takes time, because there's always bad guys who look at the rules and know how to get around them, and it will never stop, but the fight continues. And yeah, I do have it's going to be long term. I'm way more impatient than that. I want it fixed right now. But no, I do believe that people who need rules to tell them how to behave do not belong in public office, and they will be chased out.
All right, next question.
Yes, I was having a conversation with Rich Hoyne at Smith's Tavern in Voorheesville, New York.
Which he hangs out there all the time.
May 27th.
Yeah.
And Rich and I started having the conversation, and he quickly turned to me and he said, well, Trump won't last his term. And I'm just wondering, what will bring Trump down. It's only been 4 months, and what's going to be the end of
that? Is amazing.
Did we know that dispatch from Smith's Tavern? Did we know that Rich felt that way?
Yeah, he goes there. My students go there, so I hear all about Rich. I know about Rich.
Well, I know. Now, how many of your students are dating Rich?
Oh, he's going to be really mad when he hears
that. Okay, I'm sorry. It's a cheap shot. Go ahead. Not untrue, but a cheap shot.
I don't think Rich is right. I think Trump is going to be there, barring... I can't think of anything cataclysmic. I think he's going to be there till the end, and there's a possibility there'll be a Trump legacy, if not a second term for him. Did you see how red-faced he was? I'm sorry, I still have some concerns about his health. But after him, there would be a Pence administration. There could be another baby Trump administration. There could be, you know, a Kushner administration. I think it's a blight.
We should remind you, though, that we were dead wrong about how this election would turn out.
That's a good point.
Yes, you were, Mike. I, on the other hand, think that there's a very good possibility he has to leave office. Because I am convinced it's the Russians. It's always been the Russians. It's there. They're going to get it. It's going to leak. Somebody who knows something is going to say something, and he'll be out of there. I think he goes.
Russia's on a – it's not just America, by the way. The new administration in South Korea is backed by the Russians. They had more than a small hand, although it was unsuccessful so far in France. But look how powerful Le Pen's party is. He's working way overtime in Germany. This is part of a worldwide long-term effort to weaken Western democracy.
Just one more thought on the tenure of the Trump administration. He could pull a Sarah Palin and walk out early. Last week, he was complaining that his life before being president, he said, you know, I was doing all kinds of things, and this is a lot harder than he thought. So it's entirely possible, I think, that he'll decide that there's just, you know, the country doesn't deserve him.
I think that's liberal wishful thinking.
I think we have come to the...
I think from your mouth to God's ear.
We've come to the part of the morning where we go to the final question, and I leave it to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. With all the Watergate comparisons, I did a little bit of reading. The Watergate break-in, correct me if my chronology is wrong, was in 72. Mm-hmm. Nixon was gone by 74. He was, by all accounts, a brilliant strategist, a very smart politician. And he got taken down in a pre-internet era where things moved a lot slower. Meanwhile, you know, like you said, in the first 100 days, we have all this coming out. I don't think Donald Trump is as smart as Richard Nixon. Do you guys see any cause for optimism? What do we have to go for us?
Well, by optimism, you mean get him out. You're not optimistic at the prospect of a four-year Trump reign.
I'm just saying optimistic as far as, I guess, getting back on track.
Mm. No, Jeb Bush said it. He's a chaos candidate. He's going to be a chaos president. He has lived up to that from the moment, even before he got into office. No, I don't see us back on track. You have 24/7 news, so everything he does is telescoped. No, I'm not very hopeful.
And the other element about Watergate is that was a more innocent era. You know, we had expected certain behavior of presidents, and now...
we expect nothing.
Yeah, no, our expectations are much lower. We tolerate a lot of things that would never have possibly let a candidate get elected, and it happened.
Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, let me thank the wonderful crowd here at the Hearst Media Center for being with us this morning. It is wonderful for you to come out on a Thursday morning and be with us and spend your time. I thank you very much. Also, of course, thanks to wonderful to have Alan at my side. Rosemary, thank you for being here this morning. And thanks to our terrific hosts, both Rex Smith and Mike Spain from the Times Union, for being here this morning. We'll be back tomorrow, back in the studio, and have another edition of the Roundtable. As Rex mentioned, the Media Project was taped here as well. You can hear that live from this coming up this week, so that'll be awesome as well. And again, thank you very much for coming. We'll be back with more Roundtable after this.